I forgot before to mention that we have two poetry classes. If you're interested, you can see me right after. I can give you more information. But we meet at the Jewish Center from 10 to 12 on Mondays. Not this Monday because it's Memorial Day, but thereafter until August. And you are welcome. It's free. And it's... Well, we have about 10 of us that come. And we read poetry and we discuss it. And we see how it affects us. 10 to 12. Yes, you can come anytime. Not this Monday, but starting the Monday after. And then on Tuesday morning, 10 to 12, I'll be starting a poetry class at Adult Ed. You're welcome to come to that. There we read and write poems. And that... you can sign up online at the Adult Ed. It's now called the Center of Lifelong Learning. And that will be the Tuesdays, and it's starting sometime in June. Okay, so another change that happens when you adopt this more maternal style of inclusive loving that is unconditional and I even remember this in childhood. I remember that it was easier to bring my sinful self to the Virgin Mary than to God. It seemed like God was sort of frowning at me, but that she would love me no matter what, because I was responding to the maternal style. And in this very masculine style of monotheism, we have the idea of heaven and hell. You will be rewarded with heaven if you obey the rules, and you will be consigned to hell if you do not. That, of course, comes directly from the caveman style. That doesn't take us any further than we were already at in Cro-Magnon times. But look, here's somebody who did take us further. This is Shantideva. He's a Indian Buddhist teacher, 8th century. So what do you think of this? He says, "May the very pits of hell become sweet," page 173, "with fragrant pools all perfumed with the scent of lotuses and lovely with the cries of swans and geese and waterfowl so pleasing to the ear. And may all those languishing in hell come to perfect bliss." See, what kind of consciousness produced that? That came from years of practice of the loving kindness that we just talked about. Somebody found a new way of looking at what happens in the world, a new way of looking at the dark side. And instead of saying, "May they rot in hell for all eternity," he's saying, "May something happen that's more transformative." And that's from a Buddhist source. So here's one from a Christian source. This is St. Isaac of Syria. He was very well known to Dostoevsky. In fact, Dostoevsky carried his book around with him wherever he went, kept it on his night table. And the writings of St. Isaac are transposed almost literally to become the words of Father Zosima in the Brothers Karamazov. So this is what he says. "God is not one who requites evil, but sets evil right. It is absurd to assume that the sinners in hell are deprived of God's love. Love is offered impartially. God's recompense reward to sinners is that instead of a just punishment, he rewards them with resurrection, because in the fire of love, our compassion extends even to the demons. Where did this come from? It came from a potential that's in every single person for a new way of being part of humanity. Not the old way in which you deserve to get what's coming to you, but we want everyone to be embraced in this possibility of loving kindness for all. Now I want to go to one other feature of this, which is a little more, even more agitating to the ego that's trying to protect itself. So on the bottom of 174, I'm giving a quotation from the Epistle to the Hebrews. This is 13:13. First of all, executions did not take place within the city walls. They took place outside the city. Also, burials took place outside the city. They didn't want any death or images of death within the city walls. So, Epistle to the Hebrews, Jesus suffered outside the city gate. Now he's going to make city gate into a metaphor. Let us, then, go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace he bore. For here we do not have a lasting city, but are looking for one that is to come. So let's just take that phrase, which I find so powerful. He suffered humiliation, not just pain. And the author is saying, let's join him in feeling that same disgrace. That would be an example of the over-the-top style. It has three specific elements. First of all, since we were born for connection, we want to feel included and we want to feel connected. The worst thing that can happen is excommunication. Being placed outside the community. But look, here's someone who chooses it. He chooses to go outside the gate to be excluded instead of included, to have the connection broken instead of established, and this shows us that the cost of this kind of discipleship will be to give up an inclination, an instinct that's in us for connection, and to be willing to be outsiders. Imagine that. Because in the spiritual, I'm on 175, in the spiritual world, everything is reverse. In that realm, we do not cling to connection, but are willing to be marginalized because of the choices we make. It no longer matters if we're outsiders, because the one we're joining outside is the new universal human. The one who's showing us what humans now can be. Secondly, we all want to be treated with respect. We want to have a sense that people honor us. But look, he cancels that. He says, it no longer matters whether people respect the choices I've made. I'm not looking for honor the same way other people do. I've reversed all that. I'm willing to be dishonored because I have turned away from the world where honor and respect are based on how well you fit into the society around you. I've made a choice to step outside that society, outside the gate of the city. And I no longer fear how people look at me or how they judge me. Because what everyone else calls foolish is to me the supreme wisdom. Can you imagine having this view? He's willing to endure ridicule and ignominy, shame. Because these new values are so important that the ignominy and shame no longer matter. And he also knows that if I do make the choice for this over-the-top style of loving and for really standing up for what I believe in as the extent that love can take me, if I really go this way, if I follow this calling, the result will be exclusion, broken connection, disrespect, dishonor, and this is so strong in me that I notice a new thing happening in me. Those values are no longer meaningful. Or another way of saying it is, love brings us to a whole new set of values that the world cannot understand. And third, we find comfort in believing that we have something going for us that's bigger than what the world can offer, offers riches, offers honors, offers connection, and so forth. But we have something going for us that's bigger than this. That's why the quote ends with, "For we have here no lasting city, but are looking for one that is to come." Jerusalem is not our final destination. We have another city, a new Jerusalem that awaits us. In that new Jerusalem, all these values have been reversed. And where there was hate, there's now love. And where there was disgust, there's now compassion. That's the world I'm going to. And this does not have to refer to heaven or a hereafter. It's anything that transcends our individual needs, such as caring about the common good or the spiritual evolution of the world. Because we're now connected to a higher power than what any of these conventional values can offer. And it's what sustains us. Or another way of saying it is, we are now sustained by something different. We are comforted and sustained by a higher purpose in the hands of a higher power. You would have to have this peace if any of this were to make sense. Because there is no motivation for this in the ego's world. The only motivation for this is in a world that's takes us way beyond the ego. So I took the original quote from the Epistle to the Hebrews. Jesus also suffered outside the gate. Let us therefore go forth to him out there, bearing the same humiliation that he bore. And then I broke it down and showed that what this would mean is we're willing to be outsiders. We're willing to endure ridicule and ignominy, or not being understood by our family members, or called foolish. We're willing to have all that happen because we have something going for us beyond what this world can offer. This is the most powerful element of this entire topic that we are on. because this is where you really see that the nature of this calling, or this move toward a universal and unconditional style of loving, which sometimes takes us to an heroic giving of ourselves, really is costly, but is also supported by a power that we can really trust. Any questions about this part? So if there were practices by which we could get to this point, I have given some ideas about this at the bottom of 176. Here are some ways of living that get us ready for the over-the-top love that may someday challenge us. May not, but if it does, we would have to be aware of all the hideouts and refuges that were meant to have us escape discomfort of any kind. Your sense of safety and security would no longer be based on whether people like you or whether you follow the same path that everybody else is on, because you're following it, you're listening to a different drum. You would reject and protest any familial, religious, or patriotic belief that endorses separatism or exclusivism or legitimates violence or retaliation, all the opponents of a caring connection. And you do this without blaming or discrediting anybody, but with an aspiration that they too may someday find this path. If your God is one who punishes with eternal hell, which means eternal torture, then revenge is still prominent in your psyche. Ask if you can possibly have a higher power who does not have hateful plans, one who just wants to love. And I quote Thomas Merton, "If mercy of God is gratuitous mercy, that considers no fitness, no worthiness, and no return. He doesn't base his love on whether we follow the proper rules. But the image of God that we were given is the image of the Father, the Patriarch. That is not the God of Jesus. That's not the one he called our Father." Recall that you're not alone on this challenging path. Your choice to keep engaging in this type of practice has attracted many saints, angels, and bodhisattvas to your side, and they are helping you. A trust in the power of such grace, the assisting force always and everywhere at work in our daily lives, makes loving easier than ever. Something, we know not what, we know not how, is always with us to make us more loving than we have been. So even if you couldn't believe in a God or higher power, you could at least say, if there is something, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know how it works, but I do feel that it's always present. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. That sense of a thou art with me makes it possible to embrace a path like this. Any questions about this? So this universal connectedness, which also has something to do with caring about ecology and caring about the world around us, caring about the survival of the planet, changes our view of sin also, because now we can check into our attitudes and start questioning, expanding our examination of conscience, so it isn't just about what we ourselves have done in our own little circle, but what we're doing to the earth. So we have a new set of, a new description of sin. It's sin against Mother Earth, against the maternal love that this planet represents. So these would be the new social sins. The unjust distribution of goods that is based on vast differential between rich and poor. I'm on the bottom of 184. When you somehow contribute to that, so that you're part of how there's such a big difference between rich and poor, that's the equivalent of harming the planet. Secondly, destruction of the environment and its ecology for the sake of keeping the comfortable lifestyle that you have. Any support of violence, war, or nuclear arms. Oppression and prejudice based on race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, and political affiliation. And finally, the political and religious oppression of women in patriarchal societies. And I read a wonderful statement by Jimmy Carter when he left the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the religion of his childhood. So we all know what a big thing this is when you let go of the religion of your childhood. Because you're letting go of a connection that's more than just religious. It's familial. It's part of your own identity. But he did leave. And in his statement, when he left, he wrote a long explanation of why he was leaving. This is one of the main reasons he gave. He said, "I'm leaving because of your prejudice against women. Your prejudice against women, not letting them be equal, gives permission to people all over the globe to hurt women, to use them, to keep them enslaved and inferior. By your style of not letting them be equal, you allow other people to hurt women everywhere." I was very moved. I thought, this man is a prophet. This is a prophetic voice. And it fits perfectly for Catholicism, Islam, and all the religions that have the male God, that don't allow the female. She's asking if it would have made a change. I doubt it. But at least he was his own little voice. Of course, he was president, so it's a big voice. But he no longer cares about being excluded or breaking the connection or not being respected or honored, because his comfort and sustenance comes from a new source. That's what it's all about. A new source of safety and security, not the one that we were brought up with. Other questions about this part of it? It's very exciting, isn't it? This whole idea. It's very meaningful, I think. Okay, let's just check our time. We have a little more time. I wanted to mention one other example of a change. I think I have it in here, but I don't see it immediately. It's the maybe if you could look on 183. I did want to share this. In the new cosmology, the universe has a passion all its own and unfolds in us and in all natural things. We are the hands and feet of the universe, and our purpose is to align ourselves to its futurist or evolutionary momentum. That really fits with what we've been saying. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to mention is a teaching of Origen He's a 3rd century theologian. Origen, son of Osiris. Egyptian background. Became a Christian. And in his view, he came up with something called the final completion . The Greek word for it is apokatastasis, which means everything will somehow be fulfilled, renewed, and restored. And his view was that every single human, that all humans, and angels too, at the end of the era, or at the end of time, will go to heaven together. That the love of Christ for humanity is so strong that it will shut down hell and bring everyone into eternal happiness. Of course, these are all metaphors as we look at it now. But this is what I mean by having a view that goes beyond the reward and punishment, and they should suffer for what they did. He's not saying that. He's saying, no, the way it's set up is that we're all trying to help each other, and all the prayers that we've ever said are even helping those who are just waiting in hell until there'll be a final release. Everybody follow? And his teaching was condemned later by the official church because it would kind of take away people's motivation to follow the rules if you knew that in the end you were going to wind up successfully in heaven anyway. But I just want to mention it because I think it's an example of how someone came to a realization that is bigger than you would ever get if all you had to work with was ego. And so many of our teachings come from that place. Adam and Eve, our first parents, disobeyed God. So they are being punished by being thrown out of the Garden of Eden. And to make matters worse, the sin that they committed will be passed on to all their progeny right down to today. And that the only way that this terrible insult to God can be made up for is the execution of his own son. This kind of teaching does not come from the over-the-top way of loving. It comes from the most primitive, most unenlightened feature of our psyche. And so we have to call that what it is, the unexamined, unreleased, unenlightened primitive side of ourselves, rather than, well, since it came from official teaching, it must be right. We're now old enough and strong enough to make these distinctions and to keep what's good and what really works for us and what really makes sense and distinguish it from the other more childlike dramatic stories that we were told. Does this make sense, everything? I'm not afraid to say it. And I hope you're not afraid to make your changes. You've got to go through all your teachings. Say to yourselves, which ones help me love more? And which ones are just making me more afraid? Anyone that makes you more afraid is not the true teaching. As simple as that. If it leads to fear, it's not the revelation. It's not the
way of Christ. If it leads to love and liberation, it is.
So we're now strong enough to make those kind of distinctions. Especially since we no longer care if we're excommunicated, outsiders, humiliated, shown to be wrong, heretical, etc. Everybody follow? All right, well, I have been struck dead. So I guess I better end. I better end while I still am safely here. Okay? Okay. 185. Hold it one sec. Let's find it. 185? Okay, 185. Oh, yes. Pope Pius XI. It's a wonderful quote I have of his. Politics is the supreme expression of charity. That what politics is supposed to be is how to show more love. It's the supreme chance, because you finally have the reins of power in your hands, you get your supreme chance to create a world of love. Of course, it doesn't seem to have gotten to that point yet. But that's what he says. Well, I'd like to end with this very short and beautiful poem by Edwin Markham that kind of summarizes everything we've been talking about. They drew a circle to shut me out. They called me heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and brought them in. Thank you all. Edwin Markham.